The following talk was given by Steve Hagen at Dharma Field Meditation and Learning Center in Minneapolis on January 25th, 2026. This talk may not be played or reproduced for profit.
Well, good morning, everybody. Good to see you on this frigid day. Well, it's warming up. It's just 5 degrees below zero. I heard it was a national newscast the other day, and they mentioned that it was sub-freezing here in Minneapolis. I thought, no. People in the other part of the warmer parts of the country don't, it's sub-zero, and at the time it was negative 10. Right now it's negative 5. So for those of you in Europe that use Celsius, that's negative 20 to you. So. Anyway, but it's been cool here. Well, we're warming up. But I'm glad to see you're all here. Anyway, you made it to this talk this morning. Today I thought I'd say a few words about the Song of Jhu Mirror Awareness. I rarely talk about this, though I did give a series of lectures on it many years ago now. It's difficult to talk about. I'll probably just say a few things here at the beginning, anyway, of the piece. I'm not going to go through the whole piece. But as it gets further into the piece, well, even at the beginning, there are many things in this piece that often get mistranslated, but misinterpreted, misunderstood. And there's some very subtle understandings in this work. And so difficult to talk about in that way, to get across what is being pointed out in this particular piece. But I'm going to attempt to do that today, at least in a small part anyway, in the way this opens up. So the Song of Jhu Mirror Awareness. The teaching of thusness has been intimately communicated by Buddhas and ancestors. Now you have it. So keep it well. So the teaching of thusness, just that word thusness, is easily misunderstood or not understood at all. Thusness. What do you mean thusness? And here, well, I guess I did the final editing of this, perhaps. I don't remember, so many years ago now. But gave it a capital T, that thusness. Sometimes I'll express it as this, just this, and people, this what? See, we want to put something there because we rely on the conceptual to get the idea, something we can picture in our minds. But what this is pointing to, what it's referencing here, it's not really referencing anything at all. In a sense, in that there's anything to be pointed to. It's not pointing anything else, just simply thus. And I think perhaps over the years, maybe I feel like maybe the best way I've found to point to this is just to call your attention to the fact that this isn't nothing. Yeah, but but what is it? You know? Well, what this teaching is about is to help us see. It'll show us. It won't tell us. It'll show, because it can't tell you. And I can't tell you now, even. But it shows us. It points to the fact that you can't get hold of this. Some people then dismiss it. We call it empty. Not empty. If I were to write out that empty, I'd give it a capital E. I don't know, maybe not. I'm working on a book now where I'm debating that in my own mind now. But it's not empty in the way we normally think of, you know, empty, like the empty cookie jar or something like that. But that term... Well, this thing about thus, as I mentioned, now as it's the thing to be aware of at that point, that we can say thus. To say anything is really to say too much, because we can't really say. But it's drawing our attention to the fact that if you just notice, quiet your mind, settle down, move very slowly through this, and maybe come back to this teaching and these kinds of words and these pointings again and again and again. Be prepared to do that, well, really for life, but certainly for years. It took me quite a long time before I realized what these teachings were pointing at. I guess because I was looking for, I wanted to get the right idea. I wanted to get up, so I'm reaching. And that's, we all do that. I was doing that too for a good 10 years or so before I suddenly realized what's being pointed out here. And it's not in the words. It's not in anything I could even think or say. It is just, well, the simplest thing I've come up with then over the years is to say that it's not nothing. We can maybe use the negative there, like we do in the Heart Sutra. No eyes, no ears, no nose. And we're very confused by that. I mean, there's no eyes and there's no, so is this nothing? And I mean, we keep leaping over into or toward the notion of, and it's just a notion of nothingness or something like that, emptiness. Oh, you mean nothing. That's where we go. Because we always want to get the idea, we want to get a grasp of something here. And we feel like, well, I don't quite grasp what you're saying. Now, so until we feel like we have grasped something, and we feel like, well, I don't understand. I don't get it. I don't understand. You keep saying it, and I don't understand. This is why Suzuki wrote, I point out a lot of different things like this, where when he says, when my talk's over, you're listening, there's no need to remember what I said. And I said, why do you say things like that? I have to grasp something. I want you to just entertain the thought, at least, and then watch your own mind, that these teachings are not about you or me or any of us getting an idea about something here. The idea of truth, reality, dharma, enlightenment, all of the, whatever. Shunyata, you know, emptiness. It isn't a matter of getting an idea. When I finally saw what these teachings were pointing at, I didn't have any idea at all there. But I could see very clearly, as I had never seen to that point, what this is pointing at. It took me a while to realize that this is what Nagarjuna was doing, because I'm kind of stupid and I don't really. what I'm trying to say here is that don't expect to just, there was a distinct change in understanding, but in a way, it was sort of like, not sort of like, nothing at all. Nothing had really changed. Just saw everything differently. And, what is it? Well, I come to realize many things about that, but one of them was that we can't grasp this. That's what the Course of Teachings had been pointing out to me for years at that point. Can't grasp it, but I guess I didn't really quite take it to heart or understand. Like I said, I'm kind of stupid. But here the foolishness was in going on, trying to get a handle on this. When suddenly I could see directly that there's no handle to get hold of. But here it is. That's what we can wake up to. And that's what this thusness is about. The teaching of thusness. And it isn't, that's what a small t would be like, well, thus, and I can point to some object here or whatever, or a thought or an idea, a concept, a theory, a belief. But in this case, there's no object. And yet, this isn't nothing. Thus, that's what the Buddha's teaching, what his enlightened teachers are constantly pointing out for us. When Suzuki says, you don't need to remember what I said. Because what he said was, these are just words. Words that at some point might jar you or help you to just notice directly yourself what is there. Oh, and we can notice it because you do already know this. It is knowing reality, knowing truth. How could you not know reality? You're living it out. That's all you've ever known. It's just that we keep wanting to grasp little pieces of it. Well, first we're just, even as infants or whatever, but we're just grasping at the little doodads or whatever. And it isn't like this is, you know, you want to hang your little interesting things over the crib or whatever for the baby to, you know, and it helps them with their intellectual skills or whatever, their conceptualizing abilities. And this is all functional and useful, not just for humans, but certainly for humans. Animals, too, probably learn in their own way, though maybe not ever developing the intricate language or whatever that we have, and that we get, I don't know, taken up by, overwhelmed with, or, you know, to the extent that we've lost track of the actual original this is not nothing experience. Where this is where reality is found, the Dharma is in that, and the knowledge of it is in that, but that is what you've always experienced. So when I finally realized this, I realized a little later on too that it was sort of like I recognized something that I've always known, but I just never really gave it any credit or paid any attention to it. It was like, there's no big deal. Like, well yeah, okay, yes, this is nothing. You know, because I guess I was expecting the clouds to part and trumpets to sound and all of that. Yeah, something very quiet, very modest, to a point where we easily don't notice it. And yet, it's right there for us to notice all the time. So this teaching, then, this jewel mirror awareness, well, and a lot of, the in our chant book here, the one that right before that is the merging of difference and unity, that also starts out in the same way about this thusness, this immediacy. All the teachings are, really. But this teaching, then, of thusness, this has been intimately communicated by Buddhas and ancestors. Now you have it, so keep it well. Well, it's been communicated, by Buddhas and ancestors all along, we could say, or by reality itself. But this teaching, then, this teaching of thusness has been intimately communicated. And that term intimate, that's very important here. What exactly are we speaking of here? Intimacy. What exactly is that? We have all kinds of ideas about this. Well, oftentimes it's used in terms of sexuality or something like this. We get intimate with each other and that sort of thing. But that's not the intimacy. In fact, that's probably not intimacy at all. I mean, sexuality alone, if you look at the Jeffrey Epstein kind of stuff that goes on, yeah, there's any intimacy involved with that? Probably not. So intimacy is something else again. What is that exactly? To have an intimate friend. It doesn't have to be a sexual thing going on there necessarily, but what are we talking about? What is this intimacy, or this, how does it say here? It's been intimately communicated. This kind of communication. That's what I can say too, that on the Sangha, or the merging of difference and unity here. Here it opens up with the mind of the great sage of India. That's this Dharma, this reality, is intimately communicated between East and West. It's using that word again. Intimately communicated. This teaching is intimately communicated. Intimate in the sense that, as I've pointed out already, that you already know this. There's no separation between you, this term I we use at times, or me or something, or even you, referring to someone. But there's no separation between that and this thusness, or the mind of Buddha, mind of the great sage. It's referring to this directness with which we know and live out reality. Reality, with a capital R. Not the reality of thingness or thisness and thatness and, you know, or meanness and you-ness and all of that kind of stuff. It's just us, intimately already here. But now, this teaching, though, has been intimately communicated. Oh, and by the way, too, this intimacy, it isn't just, I'll say, simply with this teaching and that sort of thing. We can, and being intimate with other people, or even ideas, things such as this text and other things. But we can be intimate in all kinds of things. We move it, not just other people, but dogs and cats. We develop kind of an intimate relationship with pets that we might own, or, well, we own them, we say, maybe not. If it's truly intimate, meaning that you really understand your cat, or your dog, you really know them. And they know you. Not in a verbal or intellectual sort of way, conceptual way. Well, they may, yeah, to some degree, yeah, they'll know you that way too, as you know them, you recognize them, you know, that sort of thing. But you can kind of anticipate their behavior in this or that situation, or and of course sometimes they'll surprise you. It isn't like you got that down now, because it can surprise you. But you know them. And of course, a good intimate partner, or just friends, good friends. But we can also have this intimacy with our surroundings. You know, I remember as a young person, I'm from northern Minnesota, so these kinds of temperatures here for me are no big deal. You get up to, I should say, 40 below zero. But up in the Boundary Waters, I get down to 50 below zero, or I think the coldest in Minnesota, it was something like around 60 below zero. That's Fahrenheit. But we can get to know a place. I was going to say, as a young person, I went up there all the time, to the Boundary Waters, between here in Canada and into Canada, into the Quetico up there. Anyway. But we can get to know a place. And I thought I knew it pretty well until I met my friend Wayne, a friend of all of us here. He might very well be watching us now. And he lives up there. He lives out in the wilderness. He'll spend the winter out there in it's comfortable surroundings, but in a tent. But he can keep it warm. But he knows, he's known this, these surroundings, you know, pretty much for his whole adult life, and has lived in an intimate way with the wild and the different seasons and the plants and the animals and the water and all of that. And when I met him, I realized, I thought I knew that stuff pretty well. No, next to Wayne, I know nothing, you know. He really knows it. He's become intimate with that. But my point I was making, though, is that we can become intimate even with things like our surroundings, you know, and the cats and the dog. So there's some kind of closeness here where you really understand that, even if it's just a general knowledge of how to live in the woods, in the North Woods, in the middle of winter and survive and in comfort, and all of that, because you really know it. Its life is your life. Your life is its life. This is the kind of intimacy here. And this is what it's saying here, is that this kind of teaching has been intimately communicated by Buddhas and ancestors. This is how this teaching is taught. It isn't just from writing it down. I've written books, probably most of you know that. But you can only go so far with that. Giving a live talk maybe can reach a little further, you know, to convey something. But it's a different kind of knowledge and a different kind of teaching, a different kind of communication than just putting it into a conceptual form. It's written out, it's whatever, and delivered. And of course, even speaking, a certain degree of that too, as well. But with speaking, as opposed to writing, in writing I can't gesture and I can't inflect my voice and stuff like that. Whereas in talking, you know, that's maybe you can communicate a little more, perhaps. But what's really being said here about this is intimately communicated by the Buddhas and ancestors. Intimate in the sense that it's not in the words, which it'll go on to say this in a little bit. I don't know, if, probably won't get to this. Meaning is not in the words. But it yields to the inquiring spirit, it says here. I guess I won't get to that. Maybe I'll give some other talks on this later, but at the rate I'm going here, we're not going to get that far. But this is important. What I want to say here is that this intimate communication, because we're talking about communication here too, and it isn't like from the, you know, this teaching of thusness, you know, it's the Buddhas, the enlightened, you know, and the ancestors, those who have from generation to generation have woke to this and have carried it on, passed it on to the next generations. It isn't just that alone. What is being communicated then is it's not in the sutras or the various books and things that we have, and it's certainly not in the robes and I went through all that stuff, fat transmission. I did training in Japan and all of that. And I come back here to the States, I had a couple of suitcases full of stuff. But I couldn't wear, I did for a little while maybe. But I could just see where that just throws people off. When I'm communicating through wearing robes around, all sorts of things, none of which is very helpful. Some people might think, well, boy, he must be hot stuff, or he is hot stuff, or yeah, you think you're hot, you know. But it just disturbs people's minds. And why am I doing that? I want to help people wake up. You know, so there's all these outward kind of things, these outward trappings that can really get in the way. I don't mean to not do that. I ended up giving most of my robes and everything to one of my Dharma brothers, who I think has dispersed them here and there. And that's fine. I'm not against it. If I were against it, I suppose, what? If I was against it, I suppose I'd burn them or something. But that's not the point. That's going to an extreme. But it's this thing about, you know, moving through life and not getting caught by the extremes, and going to extremes. And notice what you're doing, and notice how it might communicate with others. Because this teaching can only be communicated in this intimate way, if I've gotten it across, what I mean by intimacy now, or this intimate communication. It's not in the words, or the gestures, or all of that. It doesn't mean, now, to go to the extreme and saying, well, it's not there, let's just throw it away. No, you don't need to throw this away necessarily. But look at the effects that it has on people. And what are you trying to help them with something or not? And is it helping? So it's really difficult to call. There's a lot of subtleties like this in here that can easily be misinterpreted, and they are. And that's kind of why I've avoided this text to some degree. But there's some very interesting things in this text, if you can read it properly and not taken away. And if you do read it properly, it won't be taken away. And you won't think, well, this is just a bunch of superstition or something like that, because you see, you see what it's pointing at. But this kind of teaching, though, is communicated in this way. I get this from time to time, and recently somebody wrote me something about, oh, I should just write out my lectures ahead of time and pass out, outlines of my lectures. And I don't know what I'm going to say. I know I was going to talk on this, but I don't know what I'm going to say. Because if I write it out, then that's all conceptual. I taught Buddhism in college, to some extent, I taught in the way that I do here, but I was kind of shackled in a way, and I had to kind of work with students in text and have them write papers and things like that. But that's all going to be in the conceptual, in the graspable. This teaching of thusness can't be communicated that way. And I know this. I was invited to teach it. Was at St. Olaf, actually, as an adjunct for a while. But what I really wanted to help this course, they just want to get their religion credit, and they have to get something or other, in order to graduate. And that's what the motive was for most of them. So what do I do? But anyway, that was different. But here at Dharma Field, finally, it's kind of a wide-open field, you could say, where I could just point, and we can just offer these teachings. But what I'm trying to help you with is, how to hear these teachings. And it isn't getting the right idea. You don't need to write it down or remember afterward necessarily, because the knowledge is already in your heart. You already know this. The teachings can maybe do things to help trigger you to just recall, remember what it is that you already deeply know in your heart. It's already there. It's intimately placed there. It's you. And it does communicate in spite of yourself. There's some other things that come on a little later here where I want to talk about teachings that are communicated without even using words. We have some students here. They probably don't know that I see them this way, but who do a great deal of teaching through their practice and yet not inclined to say very much. I want to point them out in a way. Just watch that person. Because we might think, you just come in and you sit down. I like to sit this way or that way or whatever. But there are some students here who they just do it. But if you can remember that this is an intimately communicated teaching, that means it doesn't necessarily come through giving lectures and talks, though it could to some degree. But it's also just in how we carry out the practice. And then, is it just the practice when you're in this room, say? Can you carry it on out there in the world to some degree, maybe? How about here in this city of Minneapolis, now under siege, sort of, by our federal government? I don't want to get into all this sort of thing, but how will you conduct yourself? If you are out there and mixing with, we have the various protests and things that are going on, can you keep it peaceful? You can communicate quite a bit, and just keep it peaceful, though. But we can learn about this way of understanding and this way of communicating and teaching and practicing. But that's what is being pointed out here in this particular text. And this communication, by the way, is a two-way thing. I was talking about my friend Wayne out there, and it's like he knows the woods and all of that and how to carry up. But how does he know this? Because the woods taught him. And he paid very careful attention. He learned the ways of that environment. and he communicates to it, and it communicates back. Same thing with your dog or your cat or whatever. The communication goes both ways, and certainly with people. I'm talking about those quiet things, not just what we might say to somebody, but if it's someone we're, you know, have intimate knowledge of or companionship with or whatever, but you can communicate. Maybe just not even just simply a gesture or a glance or something. Yeah, there's plenty of that too. But even in more subtle ways, where we understand the other. But it's a two-way thing, is the point I wanted to make now about that. And a lot of it probably isn't even where you're thinking, I'm going to try to communicate this or that. You just do it, and the other person reads that or sees it. We can see it in the practice of other people. Another thing, too, this matter of non-judgment. With this intimate communication, that needs to be there as well. There's no judging the other or yourself, or what a bad job I'm doing, but none of this, or they're bad, or I want to worship them because they're so marvelous or whatever. None of this. Because with this intimate communication, do you want to start carrying on this way with yourself in this communication of you with you? You know? Of course, you can turn you into an object, and then you can be somebody who wants to just putting yourself out there. But no, this is a matter of truly understanding, to truly understand the other, the surroundings, the situation. You also, it's the same understanding that you have of self here. Again, none of this is graspable, including yourself. But it is that kind of understanding. And with that understanding, the kind of communication and this intimate communication that is being spoken of here. Well, it's 37 minutes past. But he says, now you have it, so keep it well. Yeah, well, you've always had this. We all have this knowledge. Because it is the living it out from day to day. And then, the next one here, a silver bowl heaped with snow, a heron fading into bright moonlight. I'd like to, but I won't. But this is wonderful. But here it says a silver bowl heaped with snow, a heron hiding in the moonlight. That's what I've seen. And I love that alliteration, you know. But a heron is really the wrong word here. In case you want to look at this, I'll give you just something to think about or look at or consider. Don't think about it too much. But heron is probably really not the best word. An egret. Of course, now you've lost the alliteration of a heron hiding in the moonlight, an egret hiding in the or hiding an egret in the. But the point is, herons are just a great blue heron and a green heron, and I should have Steve out here to explain the birds. He knows the birds. But they're colored, you know, they're blue and green and whatever. An egret, I think generally the egret is white. And that's a big clue. That's what I mean by in this, it gets. Maybe the wrong word is being used, and some of the teaching that's being offered here slips away because of just the wrong choice of words. I do love heron hiding, you know, in the moonlight. You know, the words roll off the tongue better. But you see other translations. If you look at the Chinese, I think we are talking about a white bird hiding in the moonlight. That's what the line is. I'll just leave you with that. There's a lot I could say about that now, but we have run out of time, and I guess I won't go any further than what I've done. But I guess I will say this, so if you read this, or any of the other pieces here, any of it, if it's true Dharma teaching, take your time with it, and you might see something. Maybe it's sort of wrong impression, or maybe I don't get this at all, you know, but just come back to it again. At some point. And then come back to it again at some point. I come back. I've been with these things for over 50 years now, and I still come back to them. And I still notice things that I hadn't noticed before. It's amazing. But just take it like, just go slow and don't think too much. The image the egret in the moonlight, at some point, don't try to figure it out. At some point, you'll see You'll see for yourself. Interesting way to put that. But you'll see it. But that's the way to take all of these teachings. You know, just take your time with it. And don't try to figure it out intellectually or conceptually, because this teaching of thusness is not in the conceptual or the graspable or the intellectual. It's in your heart, in your mind. It's ever there. And at some point, with that thing vibrating there, the chime, whatever, it rings the chime in your heart, and you'll realize if you've known this. It just kind of comes out. I mean, now you really know this. So it's like that. Anyway, I better stop. Are there any questions about anything I've said this morning? Okay, well, thank you.
Thank you for listening. To hear more talks on Buddhism, Zen, and related topics, visit dharmafield.org.